He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you. Phenomenal tournament this past weekend at Harbortown. We will get into all of that. I want to remind you to find us on social media, 73rd Hole. Search 73rd Hole, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Go ahead and give us a like, give us a follow, and shout us out whatever is on your mind about the tournaments we've had the past couple weeks and the tournament upcoming this week at the Travelers in Connecticut. Make sure wherever you're listening to this podcast, you rate and subscribe right now. Don't wait. You will forget. Do it right now. Rate and subscribe this podcast. Taylor, it was a phenomenal weekend. Obviously, Webb Simpson gets the win. Abraham Answer, you know, just knocked it around. Accidentally hit 65 greens in regulation this week. Nothing wrong with silver.
Yeah, 65 greens. That's insane. You know, we were talking about it earlier. That's less than two. You know, that's less than two missed greens around. You're averaging over 16 greens around. You know,
that's, for anybody else hitting 16 greens in a round. That's like a career best.
Yeah, and that's not.
He did it 4 days in a row.
Yeah, 4 days in a row, and that's not.
Hit 18 on Sunday in contention.
All of them.
All had, 18
had,
greens.
Had a birdie putt on every single
you know
one.
How many times
of them.
He had to chip? Zero.
And you know,
zero chipping for Abraham Answer.
Unless it was on a par five, which we would have to look that up.
Yeah.
We
didn't get putted that. On. I know he putted off the back of 15 after he roped it over the trees, just piped it.
That was a hell of a shot.
That was a great shot. I don't remember what he did earlier in the round, but I know he was putting on 15. Yeah. So can Abraham Answer chip? We have no idea because he doesn't miss greens.
He doesn't do it. And I'm looking at his strokes gained here. So yesterday he actually gained a 0.2 strokes on the field, but round three minus 1.7. Gained 1.9 on Friday, but on the first round lost 1.2. So his week average, he was essentially just a little bit below than the average on the putts. So if he could have, obviously losing by one stroke, you make one more and all of a sudden, you know, you're in the playoff. But someone like Webb Simpson, you know, we can break down, you know, exactly how many putts he made just in comparison to someone who, you know, while he was still had a great week, you know, ball striking wise, he hit 83% of the greens on Sunday, hit 55% on Saturday, then 72%.
Do you have his total feet of putts made by chance?
Not in front of me.
I know Friday was career best.
Was stupid.
186 feet of putts Webb made on Friday, which is just a little asinine.
It is, and you know I have it right here. So like you know, coming down the stretch, the front nine, he played a bogey free 64. On Sunday, which is just spectacular. And so he birdied the only two par fives on the front nine. Pretty simple, nothing too fancy, party, everything else. Then he gets a 12. 12, he makes 10-foot, 3-inch putt for birdie. 13, he makes a 22-foot, 2-inch putt for birdie. Two putts for eagle on 15, the par five, like we just mentioned. Two putts for birdie, yes, like with for answer. And then on 16, makes 14-foot, 8-inch putt for birdie. And then 17 hits a really good shot in there, right on line. You know, some of the other guys had been missing it to the right.
A lot of the other guys. Neiman got the solo lead, and then what's he do? Immediately blocks it right on 17.
Berger hit it over there where he chipped it in at. Hatton hit it over there. The announcers were mentioning that the wind had kind of picked up from that direction, and with the trees kind of being there, you couldn't really feel it so much. So I think that might have been why a lot of
those guys.
Well,
you had to kind of draw it to keep it on the green.
He saw Webb.
Yeah, Answer and Webb both drew it onto the green, and Answer made a great bogey on 17, and he had to have
birdie. Birdie, exactly.
Made a great birdie on 17 because he knew that he had to birdie 17 and 18.
Yes, and, yeah. So what was the length of putt he made there on 17? I mean, it was like an 8 footer,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, 8-10 feet, something like that.
We'll get the exact measurement.
And then on 18, look, I know you hate to be
nine
picky.
Feet, not almost 10 footer, okay. Almost 10 footer. So that's I mean, when you know you got to make it, I mean that's
oh yeah, no, that's a solid putt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good stroke, very free flowing stroke. I like the way Abraham Answer putts the ball. But on 18 yesterday, I know he was like 40 feet from the hole. So I don't want to get too picky. I don't want to get too greedy. But let's give it a chance to go in. He left a good 18 inches short. Yeah. I know he's 40 feet away. You never won on the PGA Tour. You're trying to get into a playoff. I mean, if this putt misses, it should roll a minimum
of 2-3 feet by.
Yeah, you're thinking, and you know, there's, you know, we talked about on our analytics show, you know, obviously the closer to speed you hit it to the hole, the bigger the hole actually is, the harder it goes, the smaller the hole gets in, you know, physics wise. But at the same time, the ball can't go in if it doesn't get there.
A putt going too fast has a better chance to go in than a putt that doesn't get to the hole.
Exactly. And science. Very correct science.
We're teaching physics on today's show.
There you go, Colby. Very good. Very nice. That education's taking you somewhere now. So, and you know.
Shaping the mind.
You know, and so I don't, you know, obviously you're never going to say someone's not playing to win, but this, it assured him a solo second. So that's, first of all, that's a lot of money. Then that's a lot of FedEx points too.
Well, if he drops one more shot, then he shares second with two other guys, probably costs him, I don't know, 100K.
More than that.
Yeah, more than that. Okay. I don't have the payouts in front of me, but yeah. I mean, they would have been splitting. So they would have been splitting second, third, and fourth place money as opposed to him getting solo second.
Yeah, exactly.
Big difference.
It's a big difference. And I think the biggest difference may be the FedEx points. I don't necessarily know. You know, he's had such a good year. He doesn't necessarily need them. But at the same time, the more you can get, the better. I'm not saying that he was lagging up saying, oh, I just want to get second. You know, obviously you could tell on his face, you know, how distraught he was because he wanted to make
the playoff. Oh, it was right online too.
Oh, yeah. It was a really good putt. And, you know, we've mentioned, you know, the, you know, tour players are about 50-50 on about 8-foot putts. Maybe it's traditionally gotten to where they're a little longer now just because the guys are getting better at putting and the greens are
Faldo just actually said 7 feet 7 inches on the broadcast. I think when I was watching on Friday, he said 7 feet 7 inches is the range where a tour pro is just as likely to make as they ought to miss.
And see, that's what's so funny because so like Faldo will say 7 feet 7 inches like that, right? And the what the strokes gained percentage goes off of, generally it's by the feel, but relatively it's 7 feet 10 inches. But over the last few years, the average, like when you look at the dead middle of the tour, the average has been about 8 feet 2 inches probably. So I mean, obviously that's not even a foot difference that we're talking about here. But the point being is that, you know, Webb on the back nine made these 17-footers, 22-footer, you know,
putt Webb made on 17. Because, I mean, at that point, when he made that putt, you knew he won the tournament. Yeah. You knew it was going to be really hard for somebody to catch him. And on the backs of all those other putts that he had made, to step up and do it again on 17 for his third birdie in a row, I'm like, you know, this dude deserves to win. It sucks for Abraham Answer because he played so great. And Abraham Answer deserves to win on the tour, and maybe he will at some point win on the tour. But, I mean, he just had it taken out from underneath him yesterday by Webb and that hot putter. You just, I mean, what do you do when the guy you're trying to take down is putting into the ocean? It's like Tony Romo on those commercials with the giant hole that's 10 feet wide. That's what Webb looked like.
Well, and you know, earlier in the year when we had the waste management, when we thought Tony Finau, where he be now, was going to get that first win, Webb all of a sudden birdie 17, 18, and the playoff hole, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we kind of make, not necessarily make fun of Webb's swing, but we're like, how the hell does that, you know, produce winning tour scores, you know, or shoot you 22 under? Obviously, the putter did a lot to do with that. But
every swing he makes, it looks like he felt like he accidentally hung it out right and tried to save it with the hands.
And it goes straight, or it's a little bit of draw every time. And it's, I mean, and he's been, I can't remember exactly what year he came out. It was whenever I was in college, so probably around the 2012 mark. And he came out and was blistering the world. Maybe
2012 was the U.S. Open he won,
yeah,
right?
So it was earlier than that. Yeah, it was around 2011. And so he wins 2012 at Olympic Club. Correct?
Michael Thompson finished second that year. The reason I know that, they were talking about it on the broadcast yesterday, Michael Thompson was in contention yesterday for a while.
He was, yeah. I noticed there was, you know, some names like him and Chris Stroud and some of those
guys you hadn't seen in a minute.
Yeah, and in this big-name field, Bryce Garnett finished T17, you know? So, I mean, you see some of these names you hadn't heard of in a while that were up there, so that's good to hear. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think Webb is, you know, he got, was it 2014 when they implemented the anchor ban, I believe?
When did Adam Scott win the Masters? Was it 14?
13.
Was it 13? Okay, so then, yeah, probably 14.
Probably 14, yeah.
Because once Adam Scott won the Masters, everybody was like, oh, shut it down.
Yeah.
Shut it down.
Well, then you had Keegan Bradley won the 2011 or 10 PGA Championship, where it was at Atlanta Athletic Club. I know that. 2011 because 2010 was at Whistling Straits. But nevertheless.
Oh, yeah, 2010 was when DJ grounded his club.
Yeah, correct, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, we've gotten to the point to where, you know, Webb got past that anchoring band thing where he was struggling a little bit. Now he's got it figured out. He's got it, you know, going up his arm, kind of like, you know, everyone kind of emphasizes as the Kuchar putting stroke, you know.
He's got it going up the arm, and he uses the claw.
And the claw, yeah, and your emphasis at the claw.
I am insanely pro-claw. I mean, you can't even believe how pro-claw I am.
Well, it changed your putting entirely. You went from averaging 42 putts around to 30, probably.
Yeah. I really cannot think of one logical reason why every golfer doesn't use the claw stroke.
If you do as well as well as you do, you might as well just say it to everyone, you know. But you know, at the end of the day, I think that Webb is he's promoting himself up. I didn't see. I'll pull it up right now where exactly this moved him up into the official world golf rankings because I mean that's he's.
You know who he tied yesterday in career wins?
He's world number 5 right now.
Oh yeah, I had a another DJ stat that I wanted to throw at you. Well, I find it. Do you know who he tied yesterday in career wins?
Well, who Webb tied yesterday?
Yeah.
Let's see. I can see right here he has 7 total. So, Ricky, maybe? No, he has more than Ricky.
He's got more than Ricky. Tied Brooksy.
Really?
Brooks Koepka's got 7 tour wins, as does Webb Simpson.
Oh, how about that? Yeah. Wow.
No, Ricky's got 4 or 5, but that one of the players counts for 5.
Yeah, that's what Golf Channel said. That's exactly.
Yeah, so Webb's win yesterday means Dustin Johnson is outside the top 5 in the official world golf ranking for the first time since when? Question. How long has it been? Trivia. Just wild guess. Since DJ was outside the top 5.
That's a good point because he missed a little bit of time with the ankle thing, but he was dominating, so he's so far up to number 1. So I don't think he won the U.S. Open in 2016, so I would say it wasn't back that far. He was finishing top and all. I'm going to say 2014.
It was 2016. DJ was outside the top 5 in the world coming into the 2016 U.S. Open.
And ever since he won there,
he's never dropped out of the top 5 until this week.
Wow, how about that?
And he did it. He dropped out of the top 5 for the first time in 4 years by shooting 15 under at Harbortown.
And that's what's so crazy, you know, like we can get a little bit more in your pick, Sungjae Im, you know, who's the robot who ended up deciding to just to miss the cut on you. And
who?
My pick, DeChambeau, you know, if you had told me before the start of the week, hey, I'll give you 17 under and you can take it or you can let him play, I would have said, you know, I'm gonna swipe that up as fast as I can. I would have bet he would have won by 2 or 3 strokes at minimum.
Yeah,
you know?
I put 20 on DeChambeau on Wednesday at 14-1, but late in the day yesterday, I could tell that he had no chance of winning the golf tournament. So I was rooting heavily for bogeys. I was rooting for all the guys around him to make birdies because I'm like, all we got to do is prop some other guys up, prop Bryson down a little bit so that I am not behind by as many dollars in our one and done pool here on the pod. Because I went with the safe pick, Sungjae. I just want to make sure I got a made cut. That's the number one thing. You can't be having missed cuts in a one and done. So I went with the safe pick. Guy who plays every week and never misses the cut. And he shot 73 on Friday and backed it up with a nice little 70 shot 73 on Thursday, 70 Lord on Friday. Almighty. So, yeah, Sungjae, look, I still like Sungjae. I like watching him play. I'm just going to let you know, Sungjae, if you're listening, this is going to take me a while to get over. I'm hurt by this.
You know, he missed the cut here last year. Like I said, may have been a little bit off on the form, but miss it again this year. You know, I think if you're ever, you know, going forward, this might not be a course that suits his game, which is really weird because you would think that he would just, you know, hit his 3-wood hybrid iron driver or something, you know, because he hits it so straight right down the middle of the fairway and then, you know, be able to putt, get efficiently. But, I mean, maybe it just doesn't suit his eye, something like that. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, we had mentioned before, you know, how over the course of this tournament's entire history, you know, the third round was the easiest scoring average.
So 1969 is whenever the RBC Heritage was first played. Since 1969, the 3 lowest scoring averages by the field were round 3 of this year, round 4 of this year, and then round 2 of this year. Oh, so it's not an exaggeration to say that we've never seen golf at Harbortown played the way we saw it played over the last 3 days.
And we had mentioned some of those other names, you know, that were up there and that we hadn't heard of in a while, you know, Michael Thompson, Chris Stroud, some guys like that. But, you know, you go to the official world golf ranking strength of field. This last week it was a 712, which for comparison's sake, you know, like the Arnold Palmer's around the 600 mark, maybe 500's the Genesis this year was a 560 or something along those lines. The majors will get 700. The WGC Mexico event was like a 720 or something like that. So, I mean, it's right around the same range, you know. And, you know, some of the other tournaments. Last year, for example, the RBC was, I think, like 7.
The RBC
460.
460,
yeah. 460. So you see the increased amount of, you know, just the depth of field and how many great players are playing. But at the same time, you know, some of these other names were up there. So I don't know if maybe the course was, you know, because it didn't seem like the wind was blowing a hole. You know, it wasn't like gale force winds or anything like that, you know. But for the winning score for so long to be 11 under and then for, you know, the average score to be 11 under and then for now 12 under to get you T33 minus 11, get you T41, you know, there's something unique happened there, you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know who reminded us that he is alive and exists yesterday?
Sergio?
Sergio Garcia.
He flew way under the radar.
Where'd this guy come from?
He flew way under the radar. Shot a 70 in the first round, so you didn't really think he was in there, and then fires three straight 65s.
65.
And that's...
Bogey 15, 16, and 17 yesterday. 17, really hard birdie. 15 and 16 were yielding a lot of birdies. 17 was not. Although we did see three late. We saw Sergio make one. We saw Answer make one. We saw Webb make one on a hole that some other guys were struggling
Daniel
on.
Daniel Berger chipped in, too.
He did chip. I forget about that because he was off the green. So I guess it yielded more birdies than I probably thought. But then Sergio made par on 18. He was absolutely disgusted with his second shot. It was not a very good second shot. Didn't really give him a chance to make birdie there.
A lot of guys are bailing out right there.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
It's a back left pin.
So and the angle, like, they showed the angle behind the players and what you're looking at there... It doesn't look like you really have anywhere near that pin to hit it. It looks like if you get even remotely close to that pin, you're going to be in the drink.
Yeah, and you saw someone like Webb and I think Hatton too as well. If you get it up high enough, you know, it'll kind of come off the slope a little bit.
A little bit
know?
Of a bowl effect over there. A little bit over there.
I mean, obviously, it's not going to get you – it's not like Augusta 16 where it gets you right by the hole, you know, but it'll get you down to 25 or 30 feet, you know, which
instead of being 50 feet, you'll be 35 maybe, which is a big difference when we look at – percentages of one putt and three putting.
No doubt. Oh, a tremendous amount. You know, Webb was able to get a pin high back there, and he putted it down, and he left it about 4 feet short. And, you know, shout out my dad, Randy. You know, he had a 28-to-1 bet, and you had a little bit of change on him, too, to win as
shout
well.
Out Randy. So, Randy, so I gamble on the golf every week, and whenever your dad wants to play something, he just texts me, asks me what the odds are, and I'll put it in for him. Whatever. He's always good for it, and I always pay out when he hits. And he hit this week, had Webb at 28-to-1, and pretty much any time he bets a golfer that I'm not betting, I'll just throw $5 on him just because if the guy does happen to win, I just don't feel left out. Yeah. You know, I don't want to have a place to bet for somebody else that hits at 28-to-1 and me not being on it at all. So, yeah, he had 20 on Webb. I put 5 on Webb, so paid for my losers because I did. You know, last week I said I was going to bet Bryson and then either Reed or Morikawa. I went ahead and bet all three, so yeah. hitting the Webb bet offsets my losings from my other three guys.
Well, and that's how it works out, you know, if you pick good guys. You know, we mentioned some of those names, you know, like Reed was one of the guys that was in my DraftKings lineup. Boy, he laid an egg this week. And some of the other guys that missed the cut, big storyline, at least from our perspective, Ricky Fowler on the putting stroke.
I was just fixing to go Ricky.
What in the world?
He shoots 67 on Thursday. He shows up on Friday, and he's putting left-hand low.
What was he thinking? I don't know. I didn't see any stories about it or anything. Maybe
it was the only thing he changed. The stance was the same. The alignment was the same. He was still lifting the putter off the ground before he started his stroke. Everything else was the same. He just went from traditional grip to left-hand low, and I'm like, you just shot 67. Everyone knows you're one of the best putters in the world. You have been one of the best putters in the world for a long time. What gives with the change in putting? I just – to me – whenever a guy who is a great putter starts tinkering, like obviously something's not right now in Ricky's game. So I feel like he's just tinkering with a number of different things to try to make it work. Man, I'm telling you, that's not the thing that you change if you're Ricky. Yeah. Not in my opinion, anyway. Two bogeys, one birdie on Friday with that putting stroke.
No, I'm going here, and I'm not seeing anything about this week putting cross-handed, but, you know, there's a story here that Ricky Fowler backs Rory on left-hand low grip because Rory tried to go left-hand low, and it was a disaster. And, you know, there's a story here for 2016, Ricky Fowler on cross-handed putting before Cadillac Championship. So it seems like it's something he had experimented with before, but... From what I saw just from, you know, because he was in the featured group on Friday or whatever, so you could kind of see more of it, and you could tell that stroke's just not it's not releasing like it would be with the traditional grip. You know, he's known as having, you know, obviously, just because you have the best-looking putting stroke doesn't mean you're the best putter. Similar like Louis or Adam Scott, you know, has the best-looking swing, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're the best, you know, ball striker, you know. And so... But his putting stroke looks so natural, and he always has pretty good putting numbers. You know, when we did his player profile, we were able to figure that out. So I don't know if he just – maybe he had a few beers the night before, and his girlfriend talked to him into saying, hey, you know, you need to make
his
something.
Wife, his wife.
His wife, sorry. Sorry, I forgot they're married now. And
shout out, Allison.
Yeah, there you go. And so I don't know what was going through his head. I know
that – I was real confused.
I mean, he only missed the cut by one, but at the same time, that doesn't get you to the weekend.
He only missed the cut by one, but he shot 67 on Thursday. He shot over par on Friday in what was the third best scoring average by the field in the history of the tournament and missed the cut by a shot. So, I don't know. Something is not right now in Ricky's game. I think it's Mental is a lot to do with it.
It does. But you look at someone like Justin Thomas, who I believe he made the cut on the number.
And, oh, yeah, and then he got hot.
Then 66-63, finishes T8. So you get a lot of money, a lot of FedEx points. I mean, that one-stroke difference on making missing the cut could be monumental. Yeah. And it was for him. And I remember, I'd have to go back and look on it, but I can remember at least of one instance where Ricky three-putted where he shouldn't have from like 20 feet or 30 feet or something like that. And, you know, putting stroke could have something to do with it. And I don't know if this is going to be something we see going forward. If he's going to I need to get the full field pulled up for next week to see if for our preview show. We'll do that later on in the week. I don't have the full field ahead of me here, but I don't think he is in the field next week. Whenever he does come back out and play, I'll be interested to see what putting grip he is using, because it seems like it is something that he has maybe experimented with in the past, but at the same time, I don't think it's good for his game.
Yeah, I completely agree. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back on the other side. I'm going to give you Rory's comments on playing at Harbortown for the first time since 2009. We'll talk about what Bryson had to say about unleashing the Kraken in the near future. Bryson got a top 10 on a course, doesn't really fit his game. That, much, much more. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal weekend at Harbortown. The scores were low. It was some great golf. Got it in just before sunset last night. If they'd had to go to a playoff, they would still be playing today. So glad they got it in yesterday. We're going to take a break, come back on the other side. Keep it locked right here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back into the 73rd hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you. Glad to be here on a Monday recapping a great tournament on the PGA Tour. I was actually kind of glad that we had the rain delay yesterday. It worked out perfect for me. Yesterday was Father's Day, so my wife and I, and then my sister and my brother-in-law drove down to Chickasha, played some golf yesterday morning at Bushwood Country Club, one of our great sponsors here on the 73rd hole. And it was weird because Bushwood's a firm golf course. It plays firm and fast. And yesterday, it had rained overnight, a couple inches probably. I mean, it had poured down raining. We teed off at 9:40. It was raining in the morning, so they hadn't had a chance to get out and mow the greens. Because, I mean, it rained until, you know, half an hour probably before we got on the course. And it was so weird playing that golf course when it was wet. All my yardages were different. Everything was different. I think I like it better when it's firm and fast, because I like being I'm talking like 30, 40 yards closer to the hole when it's firm and fast. Yeah. And it makes my life a little easier.
And you feel like hit Bryson,
hit ball far.
Hit ball far. And now your ball's not rolling so far, and you're like, oh, I got to hit a 6-iron instead of a 9-iron or a wedge, you know?
There's a hole out there. How long's number 3? 480 maybe?
Probably so, somewhere around there.
Yeah, somewhere like that. And on a day when you get a south wind, it's straight downwind. It's downhill when your tee shot lands. So, I mean, it's 480. And, I mean, if you really pump one off the tee, you can have 120 in the stick.
Mm-hmm. And there's water short of the green, yes, too. So, you can actually run into the water if you hit it far.
If you hit it too far, yeah.
Or pull it a little bit.
I don't think I've ever done that. I'm sure you have. But, yeah, you feel like Big Bryson, hit ball far. So, it's fun.
Yeah, no, and it's great. And like you said, the rain, you'll obviously it's gonna help the course a lot, like it is all the other courses.
Yeah, long term, you know, really good.
And you know, like you said, even mentioned up at the greens, you know, just with how hot it's been, you know, even up there, it's getting really firm, you know. Yeah. I've been out some of the local courses around here, and so I think the rain's helping every course around here, which is really good, because you know you can't control this heat and humidity in Oklahoma, you know, so you have to moderate the best you can. I think that's gonna be good, because you know, hopefully the temperatures can stay moderate, because what you'll see at a lot of of other courses, you know, when the weather gets hot, is that, you know, they have to keep the greens at a certain length because you don't want them to burn up.
Exactly.
So if we can keep this good weather going, we can actually get on some nice fast greens, not just at Bushwood, but everywhere around. And Ouachita Valley, less than 2 weeks away now.
Yeah.
And I'm getting
we're
down
10 days from the practice round.
I know it. I'm stoked for it.
Yeah, I think we're going down twice this week. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. Am I going down next week? Yeah, I can't even remember. But I'll be playing Bushwood several times between now and the Valley. Make sure my game is right where it needs to be.
You and me both. Get you signed up. Waiting list on most of the flights. Some of the higher flights still have some availability. So make sure to call down there at Bushwood. See if there's some availability in your flight and see where they can get you, because I guarantee you won't have a bad time playing it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Get yourself signed up for the Ouachita Valley, the oldest tournament in the state of Oklahoma. 405-224-1250. If you want to call Bushwood, 405-224-1250. Give them a call. Get yourself signed up for the Ouachita Valley. So anyway, rain delay yesterday at Harbortown. I mean, they got this thing in just in the nick of time. If they would have had to play one more hole, I don't know if they had enough light for one more hole, because, you know, it's, we get the whole cliche thing every time. Folks, it's much darker out here than our cameras make
it appear.
That's
what I was about to say, yeah.
But
it really is, though.
But then they take the filter off, and you see it, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It is dark. Well, these guys are playing golf in the dark.
It's like the only thing that's illuminating is the lights off of the property that's around there,
yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
It's kind of funny. I saw a story to where, you know, because the RBC, they didn't know that this was going to be the week of the tournament. So, you know, there's like rental properties, Airbnbs and stuff out there. And these people had booked these trips during this week,
yeah,
not knowing the tournament was here. And you could see some holes where I don't know if they the story I read was that some renters were out there, but I don't know if these people owned it or not. But on one of the holes, you know, they just had like lawn chairs out there, you know. And
there's one hole where Ryan Palmer was like a yard from being out of bounds.
I think that's the hole we're talking about.
There were a bunch of people in the yard.
Yeah, and they had their phone back there, you know, just sitting in lawn chairs, because the out of bounds is so close to where the trees and, you know, everything cuts off.
Sometimes the out of bounds is the property line, but for somebody's yard.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. And so they were sitting out there doing that. And for anyone who was able to book their resort trip a year ago, not knowing about the corona or about the golf tournament, you know, to get to a point to where, you know, it's a little bit more safer to travel and there's a professional golf tournament there with no fans, you know, that sounds like a home run deal there, too.
Win-win-win, Michael Scott would say.
No doubt about that. And so, you know, just getting back a little bit more into this tournament, It was so good to see, you know, some of these names like we don't like Koepka, but yet to see him actually come out and actually kind of, you know, treat it seriously. You know, he had that great shot on 9 where he hit it to 3 feet, 330 with a driver, almost made an albatross.
That was a bomb.
That was phenomenal.
Landed in the perfect spot.
And then he comes back after the weather delay, just throwing darts, birdies 10 and 11. Kind of.
He missed the short one on, what hole was it that he missed the short ones? Par 5 on the back, it's 15.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
About a little 4-footer.
Par 15, yeah. So, yeah, he missed a 4-foot 7-incher there. So that was not what he was looking for. Like I said, kind of faltered off. Got him 7th solo, which obviously is nothing to sad about. Like I said, how many times have we said, you know, if you would have taking any of these scores, 20 under, 19, 17, all the way down to 14 under, say, before the tournament, give me that score, and, you know, this guy's going to win. But, you know, it just played easy. All these great players are playing. And I love this course. You know, you mentioned we're going to get into the Rory comments. You know, essentially, I think you have a quote
for
quote.
Yeah, you want to get into it here?
Yeah, read quote for quote what he
said. Yeah, so Rory hasn't played here since 2009, and he got back out here this week, and Rory said this after the tournament was done. He said, once I got here and I played the golf course, I sort of remembered why I haven't been here for a while.
Yeah.
He goes on, he says, it's tough. Like, it's a lovely place. There's just other courses on tour that probably fit my game a little bit better. So, doesn't sound like Rory's a big fan of just a short, tight golf course. I mean, Harbortown requires a lot of precision, and Rory's the number one player in the world. He can do that at times, but, I mean, his game is designed to just rip drivers and wedges, baby.
Well, you know, I've never played Harbortown myself, but, you know, just from what I've seen and from playing other Pete Dye courses, you know, it's not your traditional Pete Dye, you know. I mean, obviously it's got the same kind of look characteristics with like the railroad ties and the bunkers and some of the green shapes and that. But overall, it's not like your traditional with the huge wide fair, you know, generally bigger fairways with the green complexes are similar, but there's not a whole abundance of ridges at Harbortown as there are at other courses, for example, like Oak Tree or TPC Sawgrass. And so I think that while some people love it, Pete Dye courses is a really a love-hate relationship for a lot of players. Rory's won. He won at Sawgrass, so, I mean, obviously you can't have too much qualm with the Pete Dye course. But and he won at Kiawah Island, which is another Pete Dye design, a PGA, where he won by 8 shots. And he's probably won other Pete Dye courses. I'm not even thinking off the top of my head, so I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think it's more along the lines of what you said, Colby, where, you know, he's not – while he has so much natural talent, but I just don't think that he's – you know, he doesn't have the same game management as for, say, I mean, obviously Tiger's the GOAT at game management, you know, course management specifically. But I just don't feel like that he has that instinct, you know, of to game plan how to play the course.
It kind of seems more like Rory has one way that he plays golf, and he does it better than anyone else in the world. But when he gets somewhere that just does not fit that one way that he plays golf, it's not going to work for him. Now, there aren't a lot of places like that. Let's remember, the guy had 7 top 5s in a row prior to Colonial last week. Maybe he's just not totally on form right now.
And well, and he was shot 41 or whatever on the front nine at Colonial. Yeah. So his last 5 rounds have not been extremely stellar by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, I mean, if his, you know, we're talking about how bad he played, he still made the cut, you know, so.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, he was
able. Make the cut in a bad week. That's because, like, Morikawa keeps his cut streak going, 22 straight to start his career. He's only 3 back of the GOAT now.
We've got
2 Tiger streaks that are in jeopardy right now.
So the Tigers was 25 cuts?
25 consecutive made cuts to start his career.
And then what's the other one?
The other one is most consecutive rounds under par.
Oh, Daniel Berger.
Daniel Berger's at 32. Tiger holds the record at 35.
Ooh. And I was looking, I don't think Berger's in the field this upcoming week from what I've seen. No. And
talk about a guy playing good golf. I totally whiffed on Berger. I will own up to that being a horrible prediction. I really thought it was going to be one of those deals where a guy relaxes the week after he wins. And it was the exact opposite. T3 for Berger, 63-65 on the weekend. Good for Berger for backing up his win with another top three. To me, that elevates him, his status in the world, even more so the fact that he's able to back up that win and show, okay, I didn't just get hot for a week. When I'm on form, I can be one of the better players in the world.
Right, yeah, he moved up to 28th in the world now, so he had some wrist issues. You know, he came out and he won the FedEx. Before it was the WGC event, won the FedEx event twice, and he lost the reason I'm shocked is because that he's not playing this week is because he was infamously the guy that lost in the playoff when Spieth holed that bunker shot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, he's jumping all over Griller and all that, and Berger had a 40-footer or whatever the tie. So, you know, he's played at that course well, at least once, and so I would have thought with his form that he would be there. Obviously, you know, you have other obligations and that kind of thing. And, you know, one thing that we can get into, we don't have necessarily get into it right now, but, you know, it's – you know, a couple of things. One, the news broke out about Nick Watney testing positive for corona.
Yeah, that happened on Friday.
And seemed like that same day they tested 11 other people who were supposedly exposed.
Luke List was in his group on Thursday. I'm trying to remember who the third guy in their group
was. So then it would have been the caddies and then maybe some of the other officials that may have been.
If they have a walking scorer with them or anything.
Yeah, whoever does the shot link stuff.
Yeah, those guys all had to be tested. All negative.
All negative, which is good. And I wonder, you know, I'm looking. This next week's field's really good again. I would like to see how it
top
ranks.
Top 6 in the world, right?
I think so. Well, no, I don't see DJ on here.
Is DJ not on there?
Yes, he is. He's just, wow, 28-1 for DJ. Yeah, they're not feeling very high on him. Okay. So because I'm looking at the odds right here. So
top 6 in the world then. So that's what? Rory, JT, Rom.
Rory, here's how the odds are from what I see going down. Rory's 12-1, JT's 12-1, Bryson 13-1, Webb 18-1, Brooks 20-1, Rom 20-1, Cantlay's playing 22-1, Rose 25-1, who quietly, you know, like he got off to a hot start. What did he end up finishing? 16 under T14. So he's had
a couple good weeks back to back.
So he might be peaking at the right time. Shoffley 25-1, who we were mentioned over the weekend, he was DFL going into Sunday, so he had to go out and play by himself and shot 5 under with a triple. So you
5 under with a triple ain't bad.
No, not too bad at all.
I made a triple yesterday. Didn't shoot 5 under.
But no. Triples are easily done. So
it's the second hole at Bushwood. If you ever played the second hole at Bushwood,
you got to aim right like I do.
Or you can hit it out of bounds like I did. Those are your two options.
So that's what you do. Nevertheless,
how are you feeling about Brooks? You think we're about to start getting some more good Brooks? It's been a while since we've had good. I mean, last year, you remember, after the PGA at Bethpage, it was like, okay, this dude is elite. He's on top of the world. What's going to happen here? Then he has a little bit of problems. Was it the knee that was bothering Koepka?
Yeah, I think he had some knee something over over the off season, and did
the real off season, yeah. not the COVID off season.
Correct.
So he was not playing very good in January, February.
He missed the President's Cup, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, he did miss the President's Cup for it.
Didn't play very well in January, February.
Fowler got in.
Yes.
Correct? Yeah. So.
And so, are we about to start singing Good Brooks again, or is this just, one good week?
I'm trying to pull up the official schedule here to kind of figure out, where we could expect to see some good play.
Seems like this week could be a decent fit.
I think so. I do myself. What was his odds? He's 20-1. I'll have to go back on. I think he's played here before and had a little bit of success, so it'll be interesting to see there. I do think that with all the big events coming up, I think that's another reason why we haven't seen Tiger. I think he's worried about his body fatiguing.
He's
trying to save himself. And I guess there was some news that came out and said that, it seems like everything's going to be a go for the PGA at Harding Park now in San Francisco.
Yep. PGA did announce this morning they verified the reports that there will be no fans. So the tournament will be played, no fans, the first week in August, just like it was planned. So PGA is on, which is great. Great news. Brooks has played here four times at the Travelers. Finished 51st in 2014, finished 9th in 2016, and then in 2018 and 2019, he finished 19th and 57th, respectively.
So hit or miss. It hasn't really, been up in the top five or anything like that. But, at the same time, I don't know exactly when it'll come. From what I saw, it's for him, it's just his motivation factor. And with it being, middle to end of June now, with some of the other big events, I think are they going to have the FedEx St. Jude before the PGA now, I believe? Yes. So it looks to me like the FedEx St. Jude is going to be held July 30th through August 2nd.
In Memphis?
Yes, in Memphis. And he's played really good there traditionally. He's defending champion there. So I think he'll have a really good chance there, defending champion at the PGA, which will be the week after that. So, I think that's going to be kind of the stretch that you see. And obviously the playoff events, we'll see how serious he is there. He was going to be... Before the season, when you're kind of looking at everything, he was going to be my pick at Wingfoot just because, when you're a bomber like that, it's going to be a course that he's going to have a lot of advantages on because, like we had mentioned, how many ever times Jeff Ogilvy won at 5-over when it was held there last time. So that he would be my pick to win there. Before I've seen this, if we get a little bit more play, he could still obviously move up there. So, yeah, I do expect to see – I definitely – if you're going to do the side-by-side comparison of what we saw pre-COVID compared to what we saw, essentially the last 2 years, I think we're going to be closer to the latter of the last 2 years as opposed to what we saw pre-COVID because I think that was a lot of injury / lack of motivation issues.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I want to let everyone know, once again, just a reminder, if you need a new roof, you've got to have McRae Roofing on your radar. They are the absolute best in the business, and they're going to treat you right, and that's what you want in the state of Oklahoma. Jeff McRae, friend of the show here, owner of McRae Roofing, views your roof like a canvas. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. Taylor, some of our value plays from this last week, you remember I had to outfit my DraftKings lineup with a couple guys that averaged 6,300, and those two picks did me well. Bill Hawk, Brian Stewart both did well, finished at 9 and 10 under for guys who were mega cheap. Problem was, I had Sungjae Im at, what did I have Sungjae Im at, like 9,800
or something, 10, he's pretty expensive.
Somewhere
yeah.
like that, missed the cut. I had Colin Morikawa, who finished like T68, barely got it lower than the cut number throughout the week. And then our guy, friend of the show, Taylor Gooch, his consecutive cut streak came to an end. He'd made 13 in a row. All good streaks must end. He missed the cut this past week at Harbortown, so hopefully he bounces back. I'm sure he will, but rough week for Taylor.
Yeah, he's in the field this week at the Travelers. I expect him to bounce back, like you said. He's a highly motivated player.
I'd roster him again at 7K.
Absolutely.
He made 13 of his last 14 cuts, if I did the math right.
I don't believe the lineups are out yet, so for our preview show, we'll have the exact prices out there. For example, our other friends of the show, unfortunately, on the Corn Ferry Tour, our friend Taylor Moore ended up missing the cut, but I think he's going to be able to bounce back this upcoming week as well. And then I'm trying to figure out exactly where he finished, but friend of the show, Scott Toy, Brian Harmon, had a pretty good Sunday.
He shot 65 yesterday, I think. Finished in the T30 area, I believe.
Where the hell is
I think he was
name?
T33.
No, there he is, T28. I was going to say, he moved up.
Yeah, got it to 13 under. Yeah,
so
good for Harmon.
Uh, So the week he shot 70, 67, 69, 65. T28, pretty good. Moved up 28 spots on the last round.
Bogey
so,
free yesterday. 6 birdies, no bogeys.
Very nice. That's because the caddy was giving good reads on the putts.
Oh, great read. 18, yeah. Birdied 18. Not a lot of guys are birdied 18.
Hey, that was worth a little bit of change there. That gets you up from T28 to T33, which, it's not. That'll be some FedEx points and also a little bit, change too as well. So I think, it was good to see him play well. Brian Harman's in the field next week. I had him pulled up the odds. He's actually, you scroll down, he is in the 70-1 range, which is, he's right below the bigger name. Sun JM's 40-1. Joaquin Neiman, who played really well up until 17 yesterday, is 50-1. Hovland's 50-1. He's right around that knack of guys where, they think that, he has a chance to, have a chance to win this week, and I think he does too. He seems like, at 70-1 on those odds, that might be a good play, and we'll go further into that on our preview show. But just going forward, I think that, I think Vegas sees that Harman is going to have a good week next week just based off that.
Yeah, he's been playing some pretty good golf. One thing too, we had a couple of really good hot mic moments this week.
Yes,
some
we did.
Some really good hot mic moments. Harold Varner, if we're ranking hot mic moments, was number one when he said "F you" to his ball as it was in the air on 18. Because
it was
on
he was on 18, and if I'm right, he had to hole it to make the cut.
Had to hole it to make the. He was a 2 under. Cut was a 4 under. Knew he had to hole it, and he pulled it over in the weeds. So he gave it a big "F you" as it was in the air. Rory said. What did Rory say as his ball was in the air? He dropped a pretty good
F-bomb. I think he said something like it was on some hole that he hits it right, and he was like, "Fucking every time" or something like that. Or it was something along those
lines. Oh, and then Gary Woodland had a great one. He like lined up for a cut on an approach shot on a par 4, double crossed it left. And he's like, "I hate that effing shot," and they're like, "Oh, we apologize, folks." And I love the apologies after a guy drops the F bomb on the hot mic.
Yeah, acting like it's the announcer's fault to the guy cussed, right. Whatever.
Also, acting like everyone is not thrilled that we're getting to see these guys, in their actual environment. I mean, people cuss on the golf course.
That's what's so funny is that I don't like if you. I wonder if you polled everyone that watched golf, what the percentage would be on people that actually cared if there was a cuss word said. Like, what do you think the percentage would be?
Oh, man.
People
who watch with their kids, and that's probably it.
And even then, like, if the kid plays with the parent, they're going to hear him cuss at some point. Who plays golf and doesn't cuss? Besides Kuchar. Oh, God dang it, Maddie.
Yeah, let's mic up Kuchar.
Yeah,
Let's mic up Kuchar, and we can air it on, Network or Disney Plus.
That's something that we were talking about earlier too, Colby, is that, these guys that are choosing to get mic'd up, like Ricky last week, Hadwin this last week, he had the penalty issue where he thought he was moving a rock and ended up being a sand thing, and so it broke apart, and so he ended up calling a penalty on himself. Very, very righteous thing to do by our man Adam Hadwin. But at the same time, I think you're seeing a common thing here of these players that are getting chosen to be mic'd up. They're not playing worth a damn. When they do it.
Yeah,
I
don't, it's probably a mental thing.
I think it is. Because
I'd be worried about everyone hearing every word I said.
Well, subconsciously, like you said, knowing people are listening to you, you might be thinking more about what you're going to say when you're over a shot more as opposed to hitting the shot,
Right.
And so you're not thinking clearly like you need to be.
You lose a tiny bit of focus. That's all it takes.
Exactly. And so I don't know two things going forward. One is that with the commentating thing, I don't know, or with the being mic'd up, I don't know how many players are going to continue to want to choose this option. As much as we love it, these players, they just seem to not want to do it because, like I said, Ricky was the only one who chose to do it last week, played bad. Hadwin's the only one decided to do it this week. And, Hadwin's obviously a great player, but look at all the other great players that were in the field this week, that decided to say no.
Hadwin finished T41, 72, 65, 67, 69. So aside from the first round,
so he was able to come back from that, which is good. And so So a few things. One, I don't know how that'll play going forward. And also, too, we mentioned the Nick Watney thing and the COVID. I don't know if that's going to scare any players away because, like I said, I saw Daniel Berger wasn't playing this week, so I don't know if that has anything to do with the schedule. But it just put that thought in my mind of, we had a player that tested positive. Now, all of a sudden, are some guys going to be more scared to go on this, kind of the plan that they had structured, where everyone's kind of traveling together and that kind of thing. So I'll be interested to see if you see less stacked fields going forward, maybe.
I think it will get less stacked, but I don't think it's going to be out of COVID scare. I think guys just really wanted to play, and now I think they'll start picking their schedule again like they do some more.
Well, I mean,
obviously this week we still got the top six, but I think, you know, what's the week after?
So we have Travelers this week.
Detroit won't have the top five in the world.
Detroit probably will have a little bit lackluster. Then it's the Workday Charity Open at Muirfield Village, which don't even get me started on having it back to back at Muirfield.
It's the John Deere, and that's not going to draw. That's not going to draw a big field because all the big names I would think are just going to wait and play the next week.
One thing that's really this is really something stupid to complain about, but on the PGA Tour website, the Workday Charity Open, it says it's at Muirfield Village, but underneath the golf course it says Muirfield Golf Club, and then you go down to the memorial and it says Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin. That's just something really, really picky to complain about, but I think it's funny that they're not listing those at the same course. You know, trying to throw a little bit
that's
off. That's really dumb. But nevertheless, I think that you'll at the memorial obviously will draw a big field because it's Jack's tournament. And do you think with the COVID, with being fans there, will that scare players away at all?
That's a good question. I don't know. You would think that the ropes will be a little bit further back than usual, and I would imagine, like, you know how
there might have,
I was just going to say, whenever Tiger hits it in the ropes, you know how people swarm.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to have some sort of way, some sort of people that they have, like, temporary ropes or temporary barriers where they take those ropes and they put up a barrier, and you can't get within this many feet of a player. And it shouldn't be six. It should be 20.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
let's keep all fans 20 feet away from all players. If, you know, Joe Blow in the middle of Ohio gets corona, so be it. If Tiger Woods gets corona, we've got a problem, and it could impact, you know, whether the PGA Tour plays moving forward. So,
well, yeah, and, you know, we mentioned, obviously, they're going to have limited capacity, you know, and some – maybe you might have to be some holes that, you know, you just can't go out and view. You know, maybe there's not enough room, you know, for example, between the rough and maybe a hazard or rough and, you know, a house or something like that, you know, because it's a lot of nice neighborhood around there. So maybe there might be some holes where people aren't able to go out and spectate as much, and, you know, the grandstands will have – so these are just all things that are coming into my head since, you know, unfortunately Watney did test positively, and so
by the way, let's hope Nick Watney's okay.
Oh, of course. Well, that 100%, that's the main focus here.
You know,
and well, not just him, his family too.
His family,
everyone around him,
everyone he's been around. Yeah, he's, you know, they're saying that it's not too bad and that he's doing okay, which is good, good to hear. But yeah, it was a little jarring hearing that Friday morning because you just didn't know what the reaction was going to be.
And it came out as an unnamed player initially. And then so all of a sudden the speculation is, oh, well, who was it, you know?
Well, yes, then everybody's like, well, who withdrew? And it's like, oh, Nick Watney withdrew this morning. Two plus two equals four.
Yeah, so then there we go. We figured it out. Yeah, it didn't take too long. So, and you know, like I said, these are all just kind of previewing things going forward to see how they'll impact the – you know, the landscape of the next few weeks of the tour. You know, going back to, we'll steer this back in a more positive direction. We talked about some of our value picks. You know, we gave JT Poston was a guy that I gave. He ended up
2 weeks in a row. He's played well.
2 weeks in a row. He's played well. He's playing. I think he's in the field next week. So I, you know, probably roster him depending on his price. A couple guys I gave Kisner, Cabrera, Bello didn't do so well. They both missed a cut. Kisner missed a cut by one. Cabrera, Bello missed a cut by a decent amount. Harry English played pretty good on the last day. He shot 64 in the last round to get up to T17. Johnny Vegas finished T17 as well. That was another name that we gave out. Patrick Rogers, man, he was 4 under the first day. Looked like he was doing good and really just completely pooped the bed the last day. Missed a cut. But some other guys in between there at 7,200, Brian Harman and Rory Sabatini, they both finished up there. Sabatini, boy, he had himself a pretty good little stretch. It's kind of similar to Sergio. He started off slow with the 70, then went 67, 68, 65 to get him up to T21. So, I mean, you know, we were kind of hit and miss there with some of these guys. Harry Higgs ended up making the cut. I believe Duffner made the cut. Tyler Duncan as well made the cut, had it pretty good. So we gave some, you know, fairly decent picks out there, you know, for the bottom of the barrel draft. And like you said, your two low guys that you had made the cut for you, Haas and
Stewart. Yeah,
Stewart and Haas, yeah. So, I mean, you know, now that we're getting some golf back, you know, we're getting on the right track of handicapping. It was funny, guest of our friend of the show who was on last week with us, or I guess 2 weeks now, Craig Humphreys, you know, he texted me on Saturday that his picks for the Colonial were Rahm, Webb, and Ryan Palmer. And and he texted
me too soon.
Yeah, and that's what he said. He texted me Saturday morning when they were all in the top eight on the leaderboard, and he just sent all laugh emojis and was like, "I was a week late on my picks," you know. And I said, "And that's what happens a lot in this game." But I think that, you know, now that we've seen some golf, seeing how people are handled the layover, and seeing how they're getting back into everything, I think it's going to be a little easier to handicap going forward. Guy I was disappointed in on the weekend, especially not the weekend, Sunday, was Joel Damon.
I was going to ask you about Joel Damon because he's a guy you really liked.
I really liked him. He was, what did he do? He was 6-under through two rounds. Went out, shot 63 on Saturday. So then all of a sudden,
one of the six guys to shoot 63. So he's 14 under, one back of the lead going
one back
Sunday.
Of the lead. And there was
finished 12 off.
There was 35 guys within three shots of the lead or whatever it was. And, you know, Saturday I'm mad at myself because, like, you know, he was 80-1 and I wanted to lay some change on him. And I, you know, I didn't text you last minute. And I'm glad I didn't because his 75 on Sunday was nothing to bring home to mama. So it was bad to see him do that. But some of the other guys we gave did good. And I tell you what, you know, we can just, you know, go a little bit deeper into it. I mean, Tyrrell Hatton is a golfing son of a buck. I mean,
he is a ball striking machine.
And you could see even on the last few holes, he kind of had the flares going a little bit. Didn't seem like he was clearing like he should on his swing. But man, he just, I don't know when to pick against the guy because it just seemed like he plays good all the time. He's kind of like he's getting in that M category, you know.
Yeah, he's been the best ball striker statistically. He's been the best ball striker on tour this year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And he had a wrist issue in the early of the year, so he didn't play the big European Tour events like Abu Dhabi and the Dubai Desert Classic, like all the normal European Tour guys. He didn't play any of those. So his first event back was WGC, and then he played good there, won Bay Hill, and then now he's finished T3 here. So I didn't see him on the odds of playing next week. I don't see him listed here, so I don't assume he's in the field. But next time he is, I may not bet him to win, but I'm gonna definitely lay him on DraftKings for sure because I mean that's from what we've seen this year so far, and I mean I've liked him going back for a few years now, but he's just every single year is getting better, 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 and better.
Yeah, no doubt. Quick trivia: four players so far have shot in the 60s in all eight rounds since the PGA Tour's return. How many of those four can you guess? Four guys in the 60s, all eight rounds.
I'm going Daniel Berger.
Yep, that was the obvious one.
So now we got to think of guys that played both. Webb?
Did Webb play? No,
he didn't. Yeah, he missed a cut last week, so that's definitely not it. Answer.
No, not answer.
Really?
Not
oh,
answer.
Oh, man, boy, I'm way off here. Oh, shit.
Of them was one of our value plays.
Ooh, value play.
It was one of your value plays that you liked.
One of my value plays. Was it Poston?
It was JT Poston. JT Poston. In the 60s, all eight rounds.
Okay. I'm trying to scroll through here. DeChambeau shot 70, so it's not him.
We've got an American and a Brit left.
American and a Brit. Oh, man. Rose shot 67 or 70, so it's not him. Is it Poulter?
Nope, not Poulter.
Not Poulter. Fitzpatrick.
Matthew Fitzpatrick.
Now I'm trying to remember who played a Colonial and who didn't, you know?
And then we got one more.
One more.
American.
And this is an American. Is it DJ?
Nope.
Not DJ. Brooks? No, not Brooks.
It was Brooks.
Is it Brooks?
Brooks shot all four rounds in the 60s, times.
Okay, so name the four again real quick.
So Daniel Berger. Brooks Koepka, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and JT Poston. All eight rounds in the 60s. Something to look for going into this week. Four guys playing really well.
So Koepka, 20-1 this week, just off the quick. Berger's not playing. Fitzpatrick's 40-1, maybe a decent value there. And Poston is 60-1 right there around the just a little bit better than a friend of the show, Brian Harmon, Caddy Scott Tway. And our boy Joel Damon, who I think will eventually get it done, is in the 70-1 range as well. Might end up going there. But then this goes to show, I mean, someone who was used to be number one in the world and was just dominating, Jason Day, he's 80-1 this week.
Wow.
Is that not crazy?
He's just totally falling off. It's the health.
It's the injuries and everything. And like I said, our previous show, we'll go a little bit more. It looks like Phil's playing. Speaking of way down there, 100.
Really?
125-1.
Yeah, not good enough value for me.
You need like three. Gosh, dang. Is that not crazy?
It's sad.
And quick guy right here. Played good this week. Dylan Fratelli is 125-1. He might be a guy to look at potentially.
Well, Sunday 62.
Yeah.
At Harbor Town.
Riding some wave. And I'd have to look. I don't know how he played last week at Colonial. I think he missed the cut there, actually. But maybe he's found something. But at the end of the day, going back to, you know, kind of sum everything up, I thought Bryson was going to dominate. Like I said, if you would have told me but the start of the week he was going to shoot 17 under, I would have agreed with you and said he won by two or three shots, end up finishing T8, which for one and done pool, for our one and done pool, it was all right because you had a missed cut. But the big one and done pool, I'm way down there. I need some wins to get up there. T8's not going to get the job done. So I don't know if my one and done curse will ever be broken at this point for this year.
Who knows? Got to pick a winner eventually. Or at least the top five, which you have zero of currently.
No top fives, which is weird. And I have like three sixth and like 2/8 and but the thing is with the one and done pulling us down with money, you know, you get a winner and that adds all of those up into one, you know.
You want one last great stat before we get out of here?
Absolutely.
So Sergio Garcia, just talking about his ball striking and how great his ball striking was. Sergio led the field in birdies for the week, made 27 birdies. He ranked 70th out of 75 players to make the cut in strokes gained putting. He was nearly the worst putter this week to make the cut, finished 3 off the lead, led the field in birdies because he was hitting the ball so well.
I mean, that kind of sounds like Sergio's career in a nutshell, doesn't it? Just ball striking,
more or less, yeah.
Ball striking, living hell out of it, and then just not getting the job done. Sergio playing next week, seen here 40-1. Maybe he keeps riding the wave. We'll get into that in our preview show. But I really loved watching this event this last week. And the Colonial is the same way, where you just have so many guys and so many great players up at the top that have a chance to win, you know? And it's like last week we were really close to having like a 6-man playoff. And at one point it looked like we could have had that this week, you know, if Webb wasn't able to break away, or, you know, just even, you know, putt here, putt miss there, you know, all of a sudden we can get even more jam packed. And you know, like someone like JT goes out early, shoots 63, gets it in at 17. We kind of knew that wasn't going to hold. For Telly was at 17 as well. But it just brings that excitement to it, you know, and I just love two things. One, it's really great just to have golf back in general and sports in general, nevertheless. And then two, I just think it's great to see all these great guys going out there playing well. And, you know, unfortunately with the whole Nick Watney testing positive for Corona, you know, hopefully everything heals with him, and hopefully it more than likely won't be the case, but hopefully he's the only one that ends up being, you know, tested. And in all honesty, if you would have said starting off, you know, for the first two events, only one person would test positive, you know, I mean, obviously it's horrible that it happened, but it could obviously be a lot worse. We could have
1 in 2 weeks, considering the number of people that have been tested, nearly a thousand tests conducted in 2 weeks, one positive. It could be a lot worse.
Yeah,
it could
that's
be a, I mean, like point, we're seeing,
0.1%.
Yeah, college football programs having a ton of guys test positive, and PGA Tour's had 1 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously it's horrible. It's happened to Watney. Hopefully everything goes all right. Hopefully his health gets good. But we're trying to, you know, compartmentalize all of this, and think the PGA Tour is definitely taking the right steps that they need to, and hopefully maybe some of the other sports organizations are trying to start back up, NBA, NFL, when they do. Hopefully they can, you know, maybe follow some of these same things. You know, obviously they play in or. You know, their sports are a lot more close contact, but, you know, maybe they can take some of the great things PGA Tour is doing and, you know, continue that. And hopefully, like I said, hopefully Nick Watney ends up being the only person during this stretch that we see any type of Corona test for.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right. Thanks everybody listening today to the 73rd hole. Remember to call Bushwood, 405-224-1250. Get your tee time made, get your practice rounds in, and get ready for the Washita Valley
coming up next week. We'll be down there tomorrow. So if you want to call, make a tee time tomorrow, come out and come say hi to us.
Yep. We'll be down there knocking around most of the day, I think. I don't know if we're playing 18 or 27 or 36. We're just going to kind of go with the flow and see how many holes we get in. So we'll be down there tomorrow, probably Friday this week. Washita Valley next week. Oldest tournament in the state of Oklahoma. Going to be an absolute blast. 405-224-1250. Give Bushwood a call. Thanks for listening. We're back Wednesday with our Travelers preview here on the 73rd hole.